Chapter 7. The Surface of Solace. Talos, the prophet of the Night Lords, bring him to me. Abaddon the Despoiler, commander of the Black Legion, War Master of Chaos. Talos and Zal locked blades. The sparring chamber was, like most of the Covenant, a shadow of its former activity. In the center of the chamber, which was tiered and inclined much like a gladiatorial arena, the two Astartes dueled alone, Talos's deactivated power sword clashing against Zal's stilled chain blade. With respect to the weapon's machine spirits, the brothers practiced with their own swords instead of practice blades, but kept them unpowered. Zal's chainsword was a standard-issue Astartes weapon, incredibly tough and resistant to damage, with vicious serrated teeth honed to monomolecular points. But Aurum, the blade taken from a slain captain of the Blood Angels, was a relic of incredible potency. A standard power sword would sunder even an honorable blade like Zal's Executioner, and Aurum was closer to an artifact than a weapon. They dueled without the crackling blue fire of the power sword and the roaring whine of the chain blade. In a way, it was worse. Their movements reeked of training instead of true battle. Talos always felt the relative silence of sparring to be unnerving and unsatisfying. And it was times like this he dwelled most on how he had been gene-forged and bred for the battlefield. He was a weapon more than a man. Never was it more obvious than in the moments of his disquiet. By mortal standards, it would have been considered a duel of the gods. The blades sliced the air faster than the human eye could follow, clash upon clash in a storm of relentless speed and force. Had any Astartes been witnessing the fight, they might have seen with a deeper clarity. Both warriors were plainly distracted, their thoughts elsewhere, obvious in every minute hesitation and flicker of the eyes. Around them, banks of human-sized passages formed into the arena walls had once housed a small army of combat servitors, engineered for practice and destined for destruction under the blades of the Astartes that came to hone their skills here. Such days were long past. The halls where the servitors had trundled from storage engineering chambers beneath the arena were silent and lightless, another reminder of a time now gone forever. Talos felt his anger swell up as he leaned back and deflected a throat cut. Melancholy was not something that sat well with him. It was alien to his thoughts, yet of late it would cling there like it belonged. That made him angry. It felt like a vulnerability in his defenses, a wound that wouldn't heal. Zal sensed the frustration in his brother's blows, and as their deactivated swords locked again, Zal leaned in close. Their faces, already similar due to the genetic enhancements that molded their bodies, glared into one another with mirrored anger. The bitter gaze from their black eyes met as surely as the blades in their hands.
"You're losing your temper," he snarled at Talos. "I'm annoyed that I need to go easy on you because of the leg," Talos growled, nodding almost imperceptibly down at Zal's healing limb.
In response, Zal hurled his brother back with a laugh, disengaging with surprising grace for one who relied so often on fury to win his fights.
"Do your worst," he said, smiling in the darkness.
Like all areas of the Covenant of Blood restricted to the Astartes alone, the sparring chambers were utterly lightless, no hindrance at all to the dark eyes of the Nostromo-born. But in former days, combat servitors had required night vision visors and aural enhancer sensors to aid with detecting movement. Talos came on again, his guard high as he executed a flawless series of two-handed cuts from the left, designed to force Zal onto his right leg more and more. He heard his brother's pained grunts as he defended himself.
"Keep it up," Zarl said, still not even breathing heavily, despite the fact they'd been dueling at an inhuman pace for almost an hour.
Still need to get used to taking weight on this leg again.
Instead of pressing the attack, Talos stopped.
Hold, he said, raising a hand.
What? Why?
Zarl asked, lowering Executioner. He looked around the silent, dark arena, seeing nothing but the empty rows of witness seats, hearing nothing but the dim growl of the ship's orbital drives, smelling nothing but the sweat from their robed bodies and the faint tang of centuries of weapon oil.
I sense no one nearby. I saw Uzas kill Sirion,
Talos said, apropos of nothing. Zarl laughed.
Right, that's good. Are we going to fight or not?
In a moment of uncharacteristic concern, Zarl tilted his head to regard his brother.
Has your head not healed? I thought it was fine. I am not joking.
In the darkness, pierced with ease by the vision of one born on a sunless world, Zarl saw his brother's black eyes regarding him without a trace of humor.
Are you speaking of your vision? You know I am. You saw wrong, Talos,
Zarl said, spitting onto the decking.
Sirion is easy to hate. He is corrupted in the worst of ways. But even a rabid fool like Uzas would never kill him.
Sirion is true to the Night Haunter,
Talos said. Zarl snorted.
We've had this argument before. He is an Astartes that knows fear. That is as corrupt as can be imagined.
He understands fear.
Does he still hear the demon warring within the Exalted?
Talos let the silence answer for him.
Exactly, Zarl nodded. He can sense fear. That is unnatural. He is corrupted.
He senses it. He does not feel it himself.
Zarl looked down at his chainsword, silent in deactivation.
Semantics! He has been corrupted by the ruinous ones, as surely as Uzas has. But they are still brothers, and I trust them. For now.
You trust Uzas?
Talos tilted his head, curious now.
We are First Claw,
Zarl answered, as if that justified everything.
At least the corruption within Uzas is visible. Sirion is the dangerous one, brother.
I have spoken to Sirion about this many times, Talos warned, and I tell you, you're wrong.
We'll see. Tell me of this vision.
Talos pictured again the sight of Uzas, an axe in hand, moving over the rubble of a shattered building, leaping at Sirion as he lay prone. He explained it to Zarl now, as faithfully as he could, omitting nothing. He spoke of the blaring war horns of the Titans above, and the dusty gray stone of the fallen buildings, still magma red in places where the rock had been cooked by the towering god machine's guns. He described the fall of the axe, the way it hooked into Sirion's neck joint, and the blood that flowed in the moments after.
That does sound like Uzas, Zarl said at length. A vicious kill, and perfectly made against helpless prey. I am no longer so sure this was a foolish joke of yours.
He despises Sirion, Talos pointed out.
He moved to the side of the arena, where Aurum's sheath rested against the metal wall.
But I have been wrong before, he said over his shoulder.
Zarl shook his head again. He looked more thoughtful than Talos had ever seen him, which was disquieting purely for its unfamiliarity. It occurred to him for the first time that perhaps Zarl was one of those that invested great faith in his prophetic curse. He seemed almost unnerved.
When? Zarl said. A handful of times in how many years? No, brother. This has the stench of unwelcome truth to it.
Talos said nothing. Zarl surprised him by speaking more.
We all trust you. I don't like you, brother. You know that. It is not easy to like you. You are self-righteous, and you take risks as foolish as the exalted sometimes. You assume you lead First Claw, yet were never promoted above any of us. All you were was an apothecary. Yet you act like our sergeant now. By the false throne, you act like the captain of 10th Company. I have 100 reasons to dislike you, and they are all valid, but I trust you, Talos.
Good to know, Talos said, as he sheathed the blade and stood once more.
When were you last wrong? Zal pressed. Humor me. When was the last time one of your auguries went awry?
A long time ago, Talos said. 70 years, perhaps. On Gashik, the world where it never stopped raining. I dreamed we would see battle against the Imperial Fists, but the planet remained defenseless.
Zal scratched at his cheek, musing.
70 years? You've not been wrong in almost a century. But if Sirion does die, and you are right that he isn't corrupt, we could use his progenoid glands to gene-forge another Astartes in his place. No loss.
Talos considered drawing the blade again.
The same could be said for the death of any one of us.
Zal raised an eyebrow.
You'd harvest Uzas's gene seed?
Point taken. And it was. Talos would sooner burn that biological matter into ash before he saw it implanted within another Night Lord. Zal nodded, clearly distracted as Talos carried on.
If this comes to pass, I will kill Uzas.
Talos wasn't even sure he heard him.
I will think on this, Zal replied.
And without another word, he walked from the arena, descending into the deeper darkness of the ship. After the awkwardness of the brotherly candor a moment before, this was much more like the Zal Talos had grown to tolerate, stalking off in silence, keeping his counsel to himself. Caught between the desire to follow Zal and seek out Sirion, Talos was denied the choice a moment later. Thudding footsteps drew his attention as another figure emerged at the first tier of witness seats. Lightning-marked armor, too bulky even for Astartes' warplate.
Prophet, said Champion Malek of the Atramentar.
Yes, brother.
Your presence is required.
I see. Talos didn't move.
Inform the Exalted I am currently engaged in my meditations, and will attend him in 3 hours.
The sound of a rockslide avalanche rumbled from the hound-like helm of Malek's Terminator armor. Talos assumed it was a chuckle.
No, Prophet, it is not the Exalted that demands your presence.
Then whom?
Talos asked, his fingertips stroking the sheathed hilt of Aurum at his hip.
No one demands my attention, Malek. I am no slave.
No, no one. And what if the presence of the Night Lord Prophet was demanded by Abaddon of the Black Legion?
Talos swallowed, neither scared nor worried, but instantly on edge. This changed things.
The War Master wishes to speak with me, he said slowly, as if unsure he heard correctly. He does. You are to be ready within the hour, along with First Claw. 2 of the Atramentar will accompany you.
I need no honor guard. I will go alone.
Talos,
Malek growled. Talos still looked up at him. None of the Atramentar had ever used his name before, and he felt a terrible gravity within the use of it now.
I am listening, Malek.
This is not the time to stand alone, brother. Take First Claw, and do not argue when Garadon and I also stand with you. This is a show of strength, as surely as the Exalted's tactics in the Void War.
It took several seconds, but Talos finally nodded.
Where is this meeting taking place?
Malak held up a massive power fist, his Terminator armor clanking and the servo-driven joints snarling as he moved. Four blades slashed from his knuckles, each one as long as a mortal man's arm. At a command word Talos didn't hear, the lightning claws lived up to their name, becoming wreathed in a crackling power field that brought stark, viciously flickering light to the blackness of the arena.
"Solus," Malak replied. "The War Master walks the surface of his most recently conquered world, and we are to meet him there."
"The Black Legion," Talos said after a few moments, a dark little smirk crossing his features.
"The sons of Horus, with a heritage of treachery as great as their fallen father." "Aye, the Black Legion."
Malek's claws slid back into their housing, on the back of his massive armored fists, locked until reactivation.
"Which is why we are going in midnight clad."
The surface of Solus was the mixed, dusty red-brown of old scabs and burned flesh. It was an ugly world in all respects, even down to the taste of the air. Because of intense volcanic activity raging across the southern hemisphere for centuries, the myriad mountain ranges breathing fire into the atmosphere left the thin air tasting of ash across the planet. The spires of the penal colonies were no easier on the eyes than anything else on the surface. Towers of red stone, clawed and brutish, jutting like broken blades from natural mountain formations. The Gothic architecture so beloved of many imperial worlds was in evidence here, but in its crudest and most unskilled execution. Whoever designed the prison spires of Solus, if indeed any real design had taken place at all, knew all too well how the world would be home to souls that barely counted as part of the Imperium. His prejudice against the prisoners that were destined to come to this world and rot under its dull skies was all too obvious in the architecture. The Night Lord Thunderhawk blackened, streaked across the weatherless sky, its pilot adjusting thrust output as the gunship broke from orbital to atmospheric flight. "On approach," Septimus said, easing back on one of the several levers that handled the gunship's thrust. In the creaking control chair, which was obviously made for a larger pilot, he clicked a cluster of switches and watched the vivid green hololithic terrain display, updated every few seconds from Orspec's returns. Altitude dropping gently, speed falling, he spoke without taking his eyes from the console's displays.
"Internment Spire Delta II, this is the 8th Legion, Thunderhawk blackened. We are on southern approach. Respond."
Silence greeted his attempts at communication. "What now?" he asked over his shoulder. Talos, armored and armed, standing behind the pilot's throne, shook his head.
"Don't bother repeating the hail. The Black Legion is hardly noted for excellence in re-establishing infrastructures upon the worlds it conquers."
Sirion was making final reverent checks over his bolter.
"And we are?"
Talos didn't turn to his brother. In the spacious cockpit, where all of First Claw stood behind Septimus and Eurydice in the pilot and co-pilot thrones, Talos watched the thin, dusty red mist breaking apart over the front windows as they closed in on their destination.
"We do not conquer worlds," Talos replied. "Our mandate is not the same as theirs, nor is our ultimate aim."
Keeping himself out of their debate, Septimus waited until he was sure they would say no more.
5 minutes, Master. I'll bring us down on the spire-top landing platform. Your flying is improving, slave.
It was Zal who stepped forward, resting a gauntleted hand on the back of Septimus's chair. There was nothing comforting in the gesture. Septimus could see their reflections in the view screen, all without their helms. Talos, handsome and stern, Sirion, weary with a half-smile. Zal, sneering and bitter, and Uzas, dead-eyed and licking his teeth as he stared at nothing in particular. And Eurydice. He noticed her reflection last, still unused to her presence. She met his eyes in the reflection on the cockpit window and offered him an expressionless glance that could have meant anything. Her hair, scruffy and chestnut brown, framed her face in choppy locks. The iron strip still concealed her third eye, and Septimus often found himself wondering just what it would look like. She wore the ragged, dark blue jacket and trousers of the Legion serfs, though getting her into the loose uniform had been no easy feat. She'd only relented to Septimus's insistence when he pointed out how bad she smelled, still wearing the same clothes they'd captured her in weeks before. They hadn't branded her yet. The tattoo beneath his clothes that covered his shoulder blades itched as if in sympathy with his thoughts. A winged skull in black ink mixed with Astarte's blood. If she gave her allegiance, if she survived, she'd be branded soon enough. Ahead of him, the thin mist parted to reveal a clawed cluster of peaks, topped by a spire that could only be their destination. Talos and the others reached for their helms, sealing them in place. Septimus was familiar with the differences between them, as familiar to him as their natural faces. Sirion's helm was older than the other death masks, a Mark II design with narrowed eyes and an almost knightly aesthetic. He wore few trophies, but his armor was decorated in great detail with jagged bolts of blue-white lightning, twin storm bolts streaked from his ruby eye lenses like forked tears. In contrast, Zal's helm was the newest, a Mark VII piece, taken from a recent engagement with the Dark Angels. It ordered one of the few remaining artificers to modify it, with the hand-painted demonic skull covering the faceplate. He displayed trophies with relish and pride, alien and human skulls hanging from chains across his armor, scrolls of past deeds draped across his shoulder pads. Uzas wore a grim-faced Mark III helm, the paintwork crudely done with little care. Stark against the dark blue was a red palm print with splayed fingers, done with his own hand dipped in blood and pressed against the helm's face. Talos's helm, a studded Mark V design, freshly repaired by his servant's craftsmanship, featured a skulled face of creamy bone, with an Ostraman rune branded black into the forehead. When Septimus had been reshaping the helm on the artificer deck of the Covenant, Eurydice had asked what the sigil meant. "It's like in midnight clad," he said, repainting the bone face with both reverence and the ease of familiarity. "It doesn't translate well into low Gothic. I'm getting tired of hearing that." "Well, it's true. Nostromo was a world of high politics and a complicated underworld that infested all layers of society. The tongue has its roots in high Gothic, but much had changed through generations of unique phrasing by faithless, trustless, peaceless people." "Trustless and peaceless aren't words." Despite herself, she smiled, watching him work. She was growing used to his stumbling attempts to speak the universal tongue. "My point stands," Septimus said, painting bone white around the left eye lens. "Nostraman is, by Gothic standards, very grand and overly poetic." "Gangsters like to think of themselves as cultured," she said with a curl to her lip. To her surprise, he nodded.
From what I gather of Nostraman history, yes, that's the conclusion I draw as well. The language became very... I don't know the word.
Flowery?
He shrugged. Close enough.
So what does that symbol mean?
It's a combination of three letters, which in turn stand for three words. The more complex a symbol, the more likely it is that a number of concepts and letters make up the final sigil.
Sorry I asked.
Fine, he said, still not looking up from his duties. It means, directly translated, ender of lives and collector of essences.
What is it in Nostraman?
Septimus spoke three words, which sounded beautiful to her ears, smooth, delicate, and curiously chilling. Nostraman, she decided, sounded like a murderer by her bedside, whispering in her ear.
Shorten it for me,
she said, feeling her skin prickle at the sound of his voice speaking the dead language.
What does it mean, direct translation or not?
Equivalently, it would mean soul hunter, he said, holding the helm up now and examining his work.
Is that what the other night lords call your master?
Eurydice asked.
No. It is the name bestowed upon him by their martyred Primarch father. His favored sons within the Eighth Legion held titles or names like that. To the Legion, he was Apothecary Talos of First Claw, or Tenth Company's Prophet. To the Night Haunter, Lord of the Eighth Legion, he was Soul Hunter.
Why?
She asked. And Septimus told her. The Thunderhawk settled on the landing platform with a gush of vented steam and the clank of its landing claws locking, taking the gunship's weight. Out of the cockpit, the gang ramp lowered on groaning, grinding hydraulics. Once it had slammed down onto the deck, the Night Lords disembarked, weapons armed. Talos led the way, Aurum active and anathema drawn. First Claw came behind him, bolters up. Behind them, with servo joints growling and heavy boots thudding onto the decking, came the Terminator-clad Atramentar warriors, Malek and Garadon. In the moments before Blackened had touched down, Septimus had been ordered to stay with the gunship. Although she wasn't included in the order, in fact the Night Lords were still essentially ignoring her, Eurydice remained with Septimus.
Septimus, Talos had said, if anyone approaches the Thunderhawk, warn them once, then open fire.
The serf had nodded. Blackened possessed a vicious armament, several heavy bolters mounted on the wings and flanks of the vessel, crewed by limbless servitors slaved directly to the gunnery consoles. The weapons were also fireable from the main cockpit console, which was fortunate considering the depleted state of 10th Company's servitor complement. Only half of the Thunderhawk's heavy bolted turrets were actively crewed. Several of the other gunships aboard the Covenant of Blood completely lacked a servitor crew. The Astartes moved with cautious speed. The decking was clear, open to a starlit sky, only thinly veiled by colorless clouds. At the north side of the thruster-burned platform, a small shelter with a double door led into the spire beneath.
"Looks like a lift," Zahn nodded to the small building. "Looks like a trap," Uzas murmured.
As if on cue, the double doors opened with a whir of mechanics, revealing four figures lit by the internal lights of an elevator.
"I was right," said Zahl. "I probably was too," Uzas persisted. "Silence,"
Talos growled into the vox, and the order was echoed by Malek of the Atramentar. Talos considered objecting to the champion issuing orders to his squad, but then, technically, First Claw was no more his to command than it was Malek's, and Malek held overall rank. The dark figures left the wide elevator, stalking onto the platform with a graceless, lumbering stride that matched the Terminator gait of the Atramentar. First Claw raised their bolters in perfect unity, each one drawing a bead on a different figure. Malek and Garadon brought their close combat weapons to bear, flanking the Astartes.
"Just therein," warned Malek.
They knew the term. The elite Terminator-armored squad of the Sons of Horus First Company.
"Not anymore." Talos didn't lower his bolter. "We don't know if they have kept that title. Times change."
The four black-armored, red-eyed Terminators approached, their own weapons raised. Brass-mouthed, double-barreled bolters and an ornate arm-mounted autocannon with twin barrels the length of spears, all aimed at the new arrivals. Where the Night Lord Terminators wore dark cloaks around their bulky forms, spiked trophy racks arced from the Black Legion's hunched backs, displaying a varied selection of Astartes helms from various Imperial chapters. Talos recognized the colors of the Crimson Fists, the Raven Guard, and a number of chapters he'd never encountered. Inconstant Imperial dogs. They divided and bred like vermin.
"Which one of you is Talos?"
The lead Terminator's voice came through his helm speakers like a detuned vox, all crackles and rasps. Talos nodded at the Black Legionnaire.
"The one aiming his blade at your heart and his bolter at your head." "Nice sword, Night Lord," the Terminator rasped, gesturing its storm bolter at Aurum, pointed at his chest plate.
Talos sighted down the golden blade, reading the lettering across the warrior's armor. Falcus, in faded indentations.
"Please," Sirion foxed over the intra-squad channel. "Tell me that rhyme wasn't his attempt at wit." "Falcus," Talos said slowly. "I am Talos of the 8th Legion. With me is First Claw, 10th Company, as well as Champion Malek and Garadon, Hammer of the Exalted, both of the Atramentar."
"You give yourselves a lot of titles," said another of the Black Legion Terminators,
the one with the long-barreled autocannon. His voice was lower than the first's, and he sported a horned helm similar to Garadon's.
"We kill a lot of people," Zarl replied.
To punctuate his words, he trailed his bolter across the four Black Legionnaires. It was posturing of the most brazen, unsubtle, even childish kind. It galled Talos that such theatrics were necessary.
"We are all allies here, under the War Master's banner," the cannon-bearer said. "There is no need for such a display of hostility." "Then lower your weapons first," Zarl offered.
"Like the nice, polite hosts you are," Sirion added.
One of the squad, Talos wasn't sure who, had privately voxed back to Septimus on board Blackened. He knew this because the heavy bolters mounted on the starboard cheek and wingtips rotated to lock onto the four Black Legion Terminators.
Nice touch, he thought. Probably Zarl's idea.
The War Master's warriors lowered their weapons a moment later, evidently neither gracious about the fact, nor with any real unity of movement.
"They move carelessly," Garadon voxed,
his disgust obvious in his tone.
"Come, brothers," said the first Black Legion Terminator, inclining his brutish helm. "The War Master, blessed scion of the Dark Ones, requests your presence."
Only when the Black Legionnaires stalked away first did the Night Lords lower their weapons.
"You remember when we used to trust each other?" Sirion voxed.
"No," Zarl said. "Let's get this over quickly," Talos cut in.
No one argued. The prison looked to be in a riot. As they descended, The lift's windows revealed floor after floor of expansive red chambers flooded with howling, screaming, fighting, running prisoners. On one floor, the window showed a yelling man's face, his fists beating on the glass and leaving bloody stains. He fled as soon as he saw what occupied the interior, which was lucky for him, as Uzas had been about to fire his bolter and end the fool's life.
"These will all be rounded up by our slaver ships, ready for the war against the Forge World," the cannon-bearing legionnaire growled in his guttural cant. "For now, we are letting them enjoy their first taste of bloodlust since they were incarcerated." "We freed them," the leader Falkus said. "We deactivated their restraining cells and granted them their liberty. They are using their first acts of freedom to butcher the internment guards that still live." He sounded both proud and amused.
Muted through the lift shaft walls, gunshots could sometimes be made out amongst the howls. Evidently, not all the guards were going down easily. The lift trembled once as it came to a halt on a floor that looked no different from any other. A horde of prisoners, many bare-chested and armed with cutlery or chunks of furniture as weapons, seemed to be beating each other to death with great enthusiasm, until the doors opened. Of all the founding legions to turn from the light of the false emperor, Talos most despised the Black Legion, the Sons of Horus. For how far they had fallen in the years since their Primarch father's death. In his eyes, they were an amalgamation of every sin and deviation across the sphere of mortal experience, armed and armored as Astartes, without a shred of the nobility that they once possessed. They consorted with demons en masse, fighting beside them and listening to their warp whispers for shards of wisdom. Just as the exalted, demon-corrupt and a shadow of the man he once was, revolted Talos, so too did the Black Legion in their wanton embrace of the ruinous powers. But as the lift doors opened, he felt just for a moment a glimmer of why they lived as they did. The floor before them was a long chamber with a central corridor and walls consisting of cells on both sides, looking across at one another. All the cell doors stood open, smeared here and there with the remains of guards slaughtered by the newly freed prisoners. And the prisoners themselves, perhaps 300 gangers, murderers, and violent criminals, were all suddenly silent. Silent and kneeling, their heads bowed towards the lift. The Black Legion Terminators heaved their spiked bulks from the lift, tromping down the central corridor without paying any attention to their worshipful supplicants. Their power was obvious. They did not live in restraint, suffering through a lack of slaves, taking pains not to reveal themselves to an enraged Imperium. And that, just for a moment, spoke to Talos. He understood them, even though he hated them. The Night Lords followed, and Talos suspected the others were as eager to reach for their sheathed weapons as he was. Humans brought to obedience through fear, that he was used to. But this reeked of something else. The sense of something sulphurous was in the air, not entirely drowned out by his breathing filters. Something sorcerous or demonic, perhaps, to inspire such terrible reverence in such a short time. At the end of the corridor, another set of doors led into a square chamber. The lights dimmed almost to nothingness. As soon as the doors closed behind them, Talos heard the melee in the prison block begin once more. Somehow, that sound was more reassuring than the silence. The chamber they had arrived at had been a mess hall. In the initial riots following their freedom, the prisoners had devastated it utterly, and what remained was a junkyard of broken tables, stools, and the corpses of 22 guards and inmates in varying states of dismemberment. Several other doors led deeper into the internment complex, but Talos would never see any more of the prison than this.
"What a creature man is," said a figure in the center of the wrecked room,
to spend its first moments of freedom destroying its own lair.
The Black Legion warriors knelt, their joints emitting low snarls at the unfamiliar movements. Terminator armor was not designed to pay reverence to others. It was designed to kill without end, without mercy, without respite. Talos's jaw clenched at the sight of the War Master's elite bowing down. Even the Atramentar, 10th Company's finest, never knelt before the Exalted. The figure in the center of the room turned, and Talos met the eyes of the most powerful, most feared being in the galaxy. The figure smiled warmly.
"Talos," said Abaddon the Despoiler, War Master of Chaos. "We must speak, you and I."